welcome. It's Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Mystery in the Cellar, later on from the Mole Mystery Theater from 1945. But first, it's John Stanley and Alfred Shirley starring in The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes in the story The Wooden Claw, first heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on February 22, 1948.
From New York City, the makers of Clippercraft clothes for men and 1036 leading retail stores from coast to coast present the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Tonight's story, The Adventure of the Wooden Claw. Well, here we are again, sitting in front of Dr. Watson's hearth. The coals have burned low, and over the rosy glow, we face our favorite medico and storyteller. What's tonight's adventure to be, Dr. Watson?
Suppose I tell the one Mr. Stark in which Holmes suggested I present myself as the next victim of the individual called the Cat.
Victim of a cat?
Yes, Mr. Stark. The Cat was an unpleasant person who went about bashing in the skulls of bank messengers in Boston Yard, which, as you know, gives out to Hogarth Lane, of course.
Oh, naturally, naturally.
Yes. A ruthless and cunning criminal, that cat, sometimes called Peggy.
Aha! So it wasn't a tomcat.
No. There you go, Mr. Stark, jumping to conclusions. Just for that, I shan't tell you any more of the story until you say a word on behalf of our sponsor.
Fair enough, Dr. Watson. Clippercraft welcomes comparison. Compare the style, compare the tailoring, compare the all-round quality of Clippercraft with any clothes anywhere near their modest prices. That's why today's demand for Clippercraft's amazing value is so great. Ask the fine local independent store that sells Clippercraft. A store you can trust, you know, makes Clippercraft available in your community. Clippercraft suits are only $40 and $45, some Clippercraft aristocrats $50, top coats and fine coverts and worsted gabardines are only $40 and $45, and sport jackets only $26.50. Only the Clippercraft plan can make values like these, including long-wearing worsted fabrics, possible, concentrating the buying power of 1036 great stores across the country, creating year-round economies in manufacturing and distribution costs. See what these savings mean to you. Compare Clippercraft with clothes selling for many dollars more. Now, Dr. Watson, will you go on with your story?
With pleasure, Mr. Stark, with pleasure. It was late one Saturday evening in May. Holmes, who had been promising to get at it all day, was finally sorting out certain odds and ends of notes and papers. He sat at his desk, the lamplight shining up into his eyes, looking rather like some gigantic bird of prey. I lay on the couch enjoying my faithful briar.
Watson, you better put out your pipe if you're going to drop off to sleep.
I wasn't sleeping. I was thinking. I always think better with my eyes closed.
And when you're snoring, I suppose.
I wasn't snoring.
Perhaps not, but you were getting ready to.
Nothing of the sort. Some people can't endure seeing anyone else relaxed and at ease while they have a job of work to do. May I point out, my dear Holmes, that if you had got at your labors at a decent hour, as I did,
well,
you wouldn't...
For pity's sake, Watson, stop being so confounded smug. Hello, what's that?
Well, the doorbell, of course. Oh, don't look so hopeful, Holmes. I don't imagine it's anything that will interrupt your labors. Probably a call for Mrs. Hudson or the greengrocer to leave his weekly bill.
It's not the greengrocer, Watson. He rings once and slips the bill under the door. No, that is someone for us. Whatever brought him here is sufficiently urgent to necessitate my postponing sorting these papers, thank heaven. Come in, come in.
Mr. Holmes, Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Holmes, it's Mr. Merriweather. You remember Mr. Merriweather, the chairman of the City and Suburban Bank around the corner from Saxe Coburg Square.
But the trouble isn't there, but in the suburban branch this time, Dr. Watson. The Chiswick branch, to be exact.
Chiswick?
It was originally pronounced Chiswick, Watson, and it's still so spelled. It means cheese farm, I believe. However, I don't imagine Mr. Merriweather has dropped in to discuss the most frequently mispronounced of all means of communication, the English language.
Good Lord, no. Mr. Holmes, something must be done to protect my bank messengers. I've had 6 in hospital with concussion of the brain, 1 a week for the last half dozen weeks. It's always on Saturday night it happens.
Dear, dear, I was under the impression that Chiswick was a quiet, respectable suburb that rarely indulged in that sort of a Saturday night.
No, but it doesn't. At least it never has, up to 6 weeks ago. And now, every Saturday night, regularly, one of my bank messengers has been attacked and robbed. Robbed of a considerable sum of money.
Oh, now we come to the crux of the matter. What exactly were your bank messengers doing with large sums of money on Saturday night?
Well, carrying it from the Elephant and Castle, the famous old alehouse in Boston Yard, to the bank to be deposited.
Isn't that a rather unusual procedure?
It is, Mr. Holmes, it is indeed. Yeah, but that's how we persuaded old Mr. Jeremy, the proprietor of the Elephant and Castle, to bring us his account.
Hmm.
You see, the Elephant and Castle does its best business on Saturday night.
Not unusually, Holmes.
Watson, quiet, please.
Old Mr. Jeremy is somewhat fidgety about having that much money lying around the place till the banks open on Monday morning. He's been robbed twice, and it's made him rather nervous.
Can't say I blame him.
If so, we arranged to have a bonded bank messenger sent over every Saturday night after closing hours to gather up the money so old Jeremy could sleep in peace. Now, I wish we never made the offer. Once the bank messenger has signed the receipt for the money, the bank is liable for any loss, down to the last penny.
By Jove, then you have had an expensive 6 weeks.
Expensive? So far, it's cost us close to £3,000.
Mm. Tell me, Mr. Merriweather, when did the first of these robberies occur?
It was 7 weeks ago tonight. It was shortly after closing hours when the policeman on the beat heard a yelling and a shouting as he came down Hogarth Lane. The spring mist was rising off the river, and at first he could see nothing.
Somebody calling, but I can't see a blessed soul.
Hello, what's the trouble and where are you?
In here, through the archway, in Boston Yard.
And who are you? And what's the difficulty?
I'm Paddy Donovan, caretaker of Hogarth House. There's a man lying under stones in bad need of help, I'm thinking.
Huh? Black as the inside of my pocket in here. What's happened to the light of the Elephant and Castle?
Sure, it's been put out this half hour. The Elephant is a law-abiding house. You'll never see old Jeremy serve a man a drink after hours.
Unless he's paid double for it. Now, don't try to whitewash Jeremy. I know the old scallywag.
Bring your lantern over here. You'd best see what can be done for this poor chap. He's in a bad way, I'm thinking.
Let's have a look at him.
Glory be to God. It's a bank messenger from the city in Suburban. A robbery, that's what it is, I warrant.
When did it happen?
I couldn't rightly say, officer. All I know is that I was locking up the front door of Hogarth House, previous to going to bed, when suddenly I heard a scuffle here in the yard, and a man called out like he was in mortal agony.
You ran in here at once?
Just so fast as ever me wooden leg would carry me up. I'm not so spry as I once was, you know. I was in time to see a great shadow of a man, dressed all in black, with a mask over his face. He was leaning over this poor fellow here. When I came into the yard through the archway, I says to myself, aha, I've got you trapped, me bucko.
Of course. The archway is the only entrance to the yard, or exit either, except you go through into the Elephant and Castle.
Which I've been after telling you has been closed this half hour since.
That says maybe. Well, at any rate, the man shoved past you and out the archway, eh?
That he did not. I may not be so spry in my feet, but my fist is as good as ever. No man alive can come it over Paddy Donovan if he ventures within arm's reach.
Oh. So he went in the Elephant and Castle.
He did not.
Then I suppose you'll be telling me he disappeared into thin air.
He did something stranger than that, my lad. He skimmed up the wall and over it, like a cat.
Whoop! Wow, that's impossible. That there wall is 12 feet high, and there's nothing for a foothold anywhere.
Possible or not, That's what happened. Up he went and over. Like a cat. A great black cat. Give me the creeps it is.
Look here. This bloke's bleeding.
Wait, it's the back of his head, I'm thinking. There's blood oozing out in the pavement from behind his ears.
Here, here. Help me turn him over. We'll have a look at the injury.
Lord love us. Will you look at that? A nasty blow it must have been.
Cool. But it's more than just an ordinary blow. Blimey. Look here. Look here. Great. Bloody gashes running right down into his neck. Like he'd been hit with a rake.
Or clawed by a giant cat.
I saw those wills, Mr. Holmes. I promise you, that's what they look like. The claw marks of a gigantic cat.
A cat man, eh? Who scales 12-foot walls and whose blow leaves deep gashes. Interesting, Mr. Merriweather. Interesting and just a bit incredible.
Well, there is no such creature, Mr. Holmes. There can't be.
Oh, I don't know. I saw one once. It was in that French music hall. Remember, Holmes? The chap went up a smooth, tiled wall nearly 16 feet high. I believe he had some sort of suction device attached to his hands and feet.
Well, that could account for it, I suppose.
It might account for the fellow's disappearance over the wall, but not for the gashes and other significant phenomena. That is what interests me, Watson, those gashes. This man with a wooden leg, Donovan, I believe you said his name was, is he a reliable witness, Mr. Merriweather?
Yes, at least I suppose so. He's been caretaker at Hogarth House for over 15 years. Hogarth House is where they have the famous collection of Hogarth drawings and the like. It's open to the public daily, except Sundays, for a small fee. I'm afraid Donovan isn't kept over busy with visitors. He spends much of his time at the Elephant and Castle.
That's it. He was drunk. Instead of seeing a pink elephant, he saw a man-sized black cat.
Who was substantial enough to claw and rob the bank messenger.
Oh, well, if you're going to be technical.
Tell me, Mr. Merriweather. Were this fellow with a wooden leg and mine host of the Elephant and Castle on good terms?
Donovan and Jeremy have been cronies for years, Mr. Holmes.
So then anything unusual that goes on at the Elephant and Castle would be known to both?
Undoubtedly. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if between them they'd cooked up a neat little scheme to do the bank out of a tidy sum of money.
Of course, Holmes, I see it all.
Incredible.
Old Jeremy follows the messenger to me who has just handed the day's profits out into the courtyard. Bludgeons him and retires quickly with the money into his own premises. Then along hobbles Mr. Donovan with a cock-and-bull story about seeing an incredible cat-like creature. Jeremy recovers his day's earnings and is reimbursed by the bank as well.
Whereupon he has to slip the swag of Mr. Donovan and is consequently no better off than if he'd saved himself the trouble.
I see your point, Mr. Holmes. But there are people, you know, who enjoy making a crooked sixpence more than a straight shilling. Oh, but good heavens, it's after 11. And I promised Jeremy I would be at the Elephant and Castle by closing time.
You mean you're undertaking the job of bank messenger yourself tonight, Mr. Merriweather?
Right. I'm not a particularly brave man, but I don't feel I have the right to ask an employee to take a risk I wouldn't wish to assume myself. On the other hand, I'm not completely cool-hearted. I think the danger would be considerably minimized if I were assisted by Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
What do you say, Watson? Would you consider a possible encounter with a cat man who robs bank messengers a sufficient excuse for postponing tidying up my papers?
What do you think, Holmes? I'll go and fetch my service revolver.
Heavens, there's a moon tonight and no fog. But here we are, gentlemen. Hogarth Lane takes its name, of course, from William Hogarth, whose country residence was here situated from 1749
to... Who goes there?
Good heavens, who... What was...
Calm yourself, Watson. It's merely a police officer on duty, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, they station an officer at either end of the lane every Saturday night now.
They've never caught anyone or prevented the numerous repetitions of the first crime.
Not so far.
Well, tonight it'll be different because Scotland Yard has personally taken over.
Well, well, if it isn't Inspector Lestrade, my favorite watchdog of the public safety.
And what do you think you're doing here, Holmes?
Endeavoring to stop the robbings and bludgeonings, which the official minions of the law and order don't seem to be able to terminate.
Well, you'll not go one step nearer the scene of this crime. No one's allowed in Busts and Yard tonight without a permit.
Which I have duly obtained, for myself and bodyguard. Here it is.
And you in thunder, are you?
Oh, allow me to introduce you, Lestrade. This is Mr. Merriweather, whose bank has suffered a considerable loss for 6 successive weeks due to the inefficiency of the police.
So you go to blazes.
With pleasure. I'm sorry to have to rush off, Lestrade, but I'm afraid you're making Mr. Merriweather late for his appointment at the Elephant and Castle. Come along, Watson.
Not a very well-lighted thoroughfare. Hey, Holmes?
Well enough. I doubt that anything will escape my notice.
Conceit? Pure conceit?
Tell me, Mr. Merriweather, in the case of the succeeding Saturday night bank robberies, was the pattern of the crime similar to the first?
Almost identical, Mr. Holmes. Except that policemen have been stationed at either end of this section of Hogarth Lane to make sure that no one could leave or enter without being seen. Well, the police are as skeptical as you about a catman, Mr. Holmes.
And yet, each week, a messenger has been clawed on the back of the head and robbed. Without uttering a sound or putting up a struggle?
Oh, not without uttering a sound, Mr. Holmes. Each time the victim has cried out. But by the time that Donovan has reached the spot, the culprit was vanishing over the wall.
Then, in each case, Donovan was the first to reach the victim.
That's right.
Interesting.
Oh, but that's only natural. Donovan is in the habit of smoking his last pipe on the steps of Hogarth House, where he is the caretaker. You see, over there, Hogarth House is almost directly opposite the entrance to Boston Yard. And consequently, after the cry was heard, he was able to reach the scene of the crime ahead of the police, who had to run some distance.
Oh, sounds reasonable enough, eh, Holmes? Oh, yes, that must be the old boy up ahead there, sitting on the steps with one leg stuck out before him. Yes, he's noticed us. He's getting up.
No, he's walking away in the other direction.
Great Scott, what was that?
A prelude to the night's crime, confound it.
But that's impossible. Mr. Merriweather is here with us.
Don't argue, Watson. Run.
There goes Donovan through the gate into the yard. I say he's spry for a chap with only one good leg.
Because he doesn't waste his breath as you do, Watson. Here's the entrance.
Donovan, what happened?
Why, I warned him not to do it. I warned him, Mr. Merriweather said. But you were late, and he wanted to get the money to the bank.
Good thought. It's Jeremy. What a blackguard has bashed old Jeremy.
But the money's safe. And up this time, they didn't get it. I was waiting. I'm done for, but the money's safe.
Jeremy, you know who hit you.
I suspect it for some time. Now I know.
He's badly hurt, Holmes. He's going fast.
He can't, not before he tells us. Mr. Jeremy, who is the criminal?
It's Peggy.
Peggy?
Holmes, he's gone.
Jeremy, my poor old Jeremy.
But who in thunder is Peggy? Do you know, Donovan?
Well, how should I know? The cat, it must have been a woman all the time. A woman dressed in men's clothes.
A woman who could give a man a blow hard enough to kill him and then disappear over a 12-foot wall. You saw her do that, Donovan, before we came in the yard a minute after you got here?
Well, that isn't normal. Maybe tonight I didn't see the killer. Maybe tonight I wouldn't know. I was that upset when I seed it with Jeremy.
Hello, what's up? What's wrong here?
Mr. Jeremy has been bludgeoned, Lestrade. He's dead.
Oh, he is, eh? Right under Mr. Sherlock Holmes's nose, eh?
Lestrade, whoever finished off old Jeremy is still here in this courtyard. He couldn't have scaled the wall this time. We'd have seen him.
But it wasn't a he, Holmes. Mr. Jeremy said his assailant's name was Peggy.
I don't care what his or her name was. If he or she is still here, I want him.
Or her?
You fellas, touch the yard.
That's what we've been doing, Governor. And I think we found something interesting here behind the rain barrel.
What's that?
Well, it's a man lying like he was drunk. Somebody that was thrown out of the pub earlier in the evening, like as not.
And who resented it and vowed to get even with Jeremy. There's motive and opportunity as well. Arrest him and take him off to jail. And you, Donovan, help him carry the body back into the Elephant and Castle.
Yes, sir. This way, boys. Carry him easy and with respect. My poor Jeremy. My poor, poor Jeremy.
Well, Holmes, you can't say Scotland Yard hasn't acted with dispatch and efficiency.
And with its usual delicate intelligence and concern for truth and justice.
If this man isn't guilty, I suppose you can tell us who is.
Quite. However, you wouldn't believe me. You see, I have no proof of my theory. It will take until next Saturday night to acquire that.
I feel dashed silly, Holmes. Dressed up in this bank messenger's outfit. What's the point to it all?
Watson, we're dealing with a sly and devious criminal. The only way is to catch him red-handed. During your service in the Far East, I believe you've taken part in a tiger hunt.
Oh, what of it?
You know the procedure. The hunter tethers a kid or a lamb to a tree and then retires to a nearby blind to wait for the tiger to attack his prey. Only this time, it's not a tiger we're after. It's a cat named Peggy.
And I'm the goat.
Quite. Yes, I think you may start on your journey across Boston Yard, Watson. It's raining tonight. Lowers the visibility. However, perhaps that's just as well, or the killer might recognize you.
Hmm.
Well, I'll open the door, and out you go. You've got the earnings of the Elephant and Castle safe in your pouch?
Well, naturally, you put them there.
Well, good luck, Watson. Don't be too nervous. Remember, Lestrade is hidden behind the rain barrel. Well,
a fine lot of comfort, that is. Well, let's get it over with.
Now, chin up, old boy. And whatever you do, fall sideways when I call out.
Into a mud puddle, probably.
Don't argue, do as I say. Your life may depend on it.
Good Lord. What a night. Teeming cats and dogs. Cats. Never cared much for cats. And this isn't going to improve much. What's that shadow slinking along the wall over there? Oh, confound this rain. I can't see a thing.
Ah!
What was that? Someone's coming this way. He's running through the gate. Donovan. Hey, Donovan, watch up. He stopped. He snatched up his wooden leg.
Now
then, Donovan. I'll take that wooden leg, if you don't mind. One with which you bludgeoned 7 people.
So it's you, Mr. Sherlock Holmes. Something told me this was my unlucky night.
You can come out, Lestrade, and take the criminal in charge.
You needn't crow, Holmes. I saw the old thing. Well, got you red-handed this time, Donovan.
Yes, you've got the criminal and his weapon. Notice the spikes in the upper end of this wooden leg. No wonder the victims looked as if they'd been clawed by a giant cat.
Well, no use hanging about in this blast of rain. Come along, Donovan. You've slugged and robbed your last bank messenger.
And it reminds me, Watson, where are you?
Flat on the ground in a puddle, of course. Look at me. Nice mess. I say, Holmes, I'm still perplexed, you know.
Why?
Well, who was the man who screamed just now? Why did Jeremy say the cat's name was Peggy? And when did you first suspect Donovan was the criminal?
The answers to those questions can wait, Watson, until I get you safely home in a hot tub. That puddle has soaked you to the skin. And besides, this is Saturday night.
And now back to Baker Street. We find Dr. Watson sitting firmly in the midst of an old-fashioned tin tub, to which Holmes is adding a tea kettle full of very hot water.
Oh, that's enough. Do you want to scald me?
Yes, you are beginning to look nicely parboiled.
I think you'll do. Then, how about answering my questions?
Oh, very well. One, the man who screamed was never the victim, Watson. It was old Donovan who was building himself an alibi. He screamed when he saw his victim cross the yard. Then he dashed in, took off his leg and bashed him while the police were running down the street in answer to his shouts for help. Two, Jeremy said the cat's name was Peggy because that's what he called Donovan. Many a peg-legged man is nicknamed Peggy, you know. And lastly, I knew Donovan was the criminal when Mr. Merriweather told us how distinctly he described the cat man who crawled over the fence on the night of the first robbery.
But why was that suspicious?
Elementary, my dear Watson. It was a dark, foggy night. He couldn't have seen the criminal in detail. Remember, it wasn't until the policeman had turned his dark lantern on the victim that he could tell he was a bank messenger. Q.E.D.
I see. It's also remarkably simple, once you explain.
It always is, Watson. It always is.
Well, don't just stand there puffing yourself up. You might get dizzy and scrub my back, you know.
Well, that was an interesting adventure, Dr. Watson. And what story are we to have next week?
Next week's story takes place in the Tower of London. It tells how Holmes and I rescued a damsel in distress and reformed a stony-hearted army officer and recovered a golden platter that should, by rights, have remained with the crown jewels. I call it the case of King Philip's golden salver.
Makers of Clippercraft clothes in 1036 leading stores from coast to coast have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes on Tuned to Yesterday from the 22nd of February 1948 on Mutual Radio. And if you're a fan of the works of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, you may have recognized in that last story elements of the Sherlock Holmes short story called The Red-Headed League, first published in 1891, and reportedly Conan Doyle's second favorite story. He authored with Holmes as the main character. This is an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for the Mole Mystery Theater with a broadcast called Legman, first heard on NBC on October 19, 1945.
Okay, two beers coming up.
Thanks, Mike. Mud in your eye?
That's 20 cents paid before you hoist in.
Trusting guy, huh? Here. Oh, Mike.
Yeah?
Here's a tip for you. A little something extra. It's a good gag, huh? But you know, I don't think Mike appreciated it.
So Big Mike is dead. Murdered by two unfriendly strangers. It seems, from the listening, to be an open and shut case. You simply find the two men who went into the bar at that particular time. And finding them shouldn't be difficult, since they each had a drink and left their glasses on the bar. Hello, creeps. This is T4Y, opening the doors to the Mystery Playhouse. Tonight, we bring you another story by your old favorite, William Irish. It's called Leg Man. You've already heard the crime being committed. Now, we plan to lead you slowly through the maze of clues and evidence. Let's see if you're as smart as you think you are. Now then, let's hear the rest of Leg Man by William Irish.
The scene.
Mike's Tavern on the Lower West Side of Manhattan. The place is jammed with policemen, detectives, photographers. Sprawled behind the bar is the body of Mike. Two bullets in him.
All right, boys, put those two glasses on the bar and let these reporters get some pictures.
Inspector, how's chances of some info? My name is Burgess from the Globe.
Oh, yeah?
How much did they take the place for?
It wasn't a cash killing. Not much dough in a bar at 9 a.m. Well, we got it figured for a grudge killing.
Got yourself a suspect, Jeff?
Nope. We've got the culprit. Solid. He's cooked, washed, and bottled. You see those glasses we just put back there in the bar?
Yeah, I see them. A whiskey jigger and a beer glass.
Yeah. Well, the whiskey jigger was covered with fingerprints.
Who's?
A guy named Hastings. Chuck Hastings.
Motive?
Plain as the nose on your face. Had some kind of a row with Mike and threatened to get even with him in front of about 100 people.
Any alibi?
None at all. Says he was alone in his room all morning.
Whose prints on the beer glass?
None. Wiped clean.
Well, that's funny, isn't it? If the beer glass was wiped clean, why not the whiskey jigger, too?
Hmm?
That sounds fishy to me.
Hey, you looking for trouble? One of the two guys had more presence of mind than the other. One remembered to wipe the glass. One forgot. The one who forgot was too busy. He was firing the shot. That's all. The case is closed.
That's all. It was a very simple case. A grudge, a killing, and some fingerprints plastered all over a whiskey glass. And the man who made them locked up. Everybody was satisfied, except Chuck Hastings, the man they locked up, and a pencil-happy leg man called Burgess, who was crazy enough to start messing around in an open-and-shut murder case.
City desk.
Eric, Burgess speaking.
Where the devil have you been? I could have written the history of Rome by now. Hold on, I'll give you a rewrite, man.
No, wait a minute, boss. I don't have the whole story yet.
All right. We're not doing piecework here, you know. Four words will finish it, and arrest is expected.
Well, as a matter of fact, the arrest has been made already.
Who?
A guy called Hastings. He had a grudge against the owner, and his prints are on the death glass.
Now, what are you waiting for? We're running a daily newspaper, not an annual. You have to wait till they execute and bury him, you know.
Listen, boss, I know there's something I think the police have missed. And it makes me think this whole thing may be a frame-up.
Listen, Burgess, get this straight. I didn't send you out to solve detective cases. I sent you out to get the facts. If the police say this Hastings did it, he did it, and it's over. I'll give you just 10 minutes to get back here, or you needn't come back at all.
Oh, boss, give me a break. Hello? Hello? Oh, go to blazes.
Get your call?
Yeah. Give me two fingers.
Coming up. You're the newspaper guy who was in here this morning asking questions about the killing, ain't you?
Yeah.
I thought I'd seen you before. Here you are. That's 40 cents.
What's the matter? Don't you trust me till I've finished it?
Sure. Just habit, I guess. The owner, Mike, he never trusted anyone. He always collected for drinks right as he put them down instead of waiting until after. Picked it up from him, I guess.
Sounds like a tight guy.
Mike? You said a mouthful.
Oh, a guy like that must have plenty of enemies.
Ah, sure.
Like who, for instance?
I don't know. As a safe bet, I'd pick this fella Chuck Hastings the police pulled in.
What's this grudge they say he had against Mike?
Well, I don't know as I could say.
Well, I was just wondering. For the paper, you know, I thought I could quote you.
Yeah? Well, of course, it's no secret. Hastings and Mike had a row in here one night. This Hastings hands the boss a $10 bill to pay him off, and the boss just gives him change for $5. Things start to get rough, and Mike jumps over the counter and throws this Hastings out.
I wouldn't say that was too much of a row.
Well, that ain't all. After Mike throws him out, Hastings picks himself off the street and hollers in the door, "I'm gonna get you for this if it's the last thing I do." I guess he did all right. Funny thing, though. Looks like Mike still didn't trust him. Made him pay up this morning when he got his drink, like always. When I came in, the register was rung up at 20 cents.
At 20 cents? Are you sure of that?
I got eyes, ain't I?
You know, it strikes me that a man as tight-fisted as Mike sounds would have a lot of people who'd like to bump him off.
Well, he did knock up against a few tough customers.
Like?
Well,
just for the heck of it.
Mind you, I ain't pointing a finger at no one in particular about this shooting.
No, no, of course not.
Well, there's a fella named Edge, Joe Edge, in the wholesale liquor racket. He and Mike have had it in for each other for a couple of years now.
How come?
Well, Edge had the old squeeze play pretty much on. He soaked Mike the limit for the liquor he sold him and then was plenty sore when Mike got tired of it and switched to another outfit.
Sore enough to kill him?
Now, look, I didn't say
that.
All
right, forget it, forget it. Say, by the way, was it a glass like this they found in the bar this morning?
Yeah, a whiskey jigger. And a beer glass in front of the other seat.
Do you keep an account of how many jiggers like this you have in stock?
Not usually, but it just happens we got in 36 yesterday.
Lost any since then?
No, I'm pretty careful.
Then you ought to have 35, not counting the one the police took, right?
Well, 35 and 18 we were down to before we reordered. That makes it 53.
Look, I'm not one of those betting guys, but I've got nothing else to do. Here's a dollar bill says you haven't got 53 in stock right now. Fade me?
Well, that's an easy way to double my money. Here, see this stick? Hmm. I'll hit the glasses so they sing out and you can keep count with me, okay?
Right. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54.
54? Well, I'll be darned. I must have figured wrong.
No. No, you didn't. Neither did I. Well, don't you see? You have one extra shot glass. Find out where it came from, and you've got the guy who killed Mike.
Hey, yeah, buddy.
Listen, was a whiskey jigger like this taken from your bar within the last few nights?
Nah, who'd take a thing like that? Don't bother me.
Okay, thanks anyway. Did anyone take a shot glass like this from your bar?
Are you kidding, mister?
Okay, thanks. No jigger taken? Thanks. Nope. Thanks. Listen, was a jigger like this taken from your bar the last couple of nights?
Nah.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, wait, mister. What was that you asked me?
I said, was one of these shot glasses swiped from your bar within the last couple of nights?
Yeah. Well, how did you know that? Who told you?
You got any idea who took it?
Yeah, a fella named Hastings. He comes in here a lot.
Hastings? Hastings? Did you see him take it?
Well, no, but it was the one he was drinking from, so he must have. When I went over to clean up, there was no glass there. I couldn't figure it.
Just beginning to see the light myself. Quite a bit of light. I think I'll try and get a few more gleams from Hastings himself.
You'd think this was old home week in the detention cells. Hastings is being held for murder, and you walk in to hold hands or something. How'd you swing it?
The power of the press, officer. This is cell?
Yeah. Hastings!
No.
Pencil Happy here wants to fan the air with you. 5 minutes. Speed it up.
Hastings, I had a hard time getting in here.
I didn't.
Listen, I've got to talk fast. Answer me straight, will you? It's the only way I can help.
What do you want to know?
Who'd you shake hands with last night?
What are you, a little punchy or something?
Listen, I mean it. Who'd you shake hands with in a bar the night before you were arrested for the killing?
I didn't meet anyone I knew. I was by myself the whole time.
You were in a place called Sullivan's on Union Avenue.
Sullivan's? Wait a minute. I didn't shake hands with anyone, but somebody did grab my map and pump it. I remember that now. There was one of those drunks next to me. Looked like a mechanic, wearing overalls. First, he apologized for slopping over against me. Then he said, no hard feelings, and reached down and pumped my hand about 16 times. That what you wanted?
That's exactly what I wanted. Did you notice your hands when you got home last night? Was there anything on them?
What are you, a mind reader? There was grease on them. Axle grease or something.
Hastings, I'm on the right track. Was he anyone you ever saw before?
No, I never saw him before in my life. He was just some stray barfly.
He wasn't stray, he was no barfly. But never mind about that now. Hastings, who hates you pretty much?
The whole world, the way it looks tonight.
Look, I'm trying to help. Who hates you enough to frame you for a murder?
Sometimes you don't know it when they do.
Oh, you usually have a pretty fair idea.
Well, there's Harlan, maybe Tom Strickland, Al Vogel ever since that mix-up in Jersey City, Joe Edge.
Joe Edge. What's he got against you?
He's a liquor distributor now, but he used to operate a speakeasy during Prohibition. I worked for him. One night we were raided and federally tried. A lot of inside dope turned up during the trial as though someone had ratted. He always thought it was me. I got off pretty light, and he got a stiff term.
Prohibition ended in 1933. You mean he'd wait 12 years to get even?
He's always had it in for me. I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised either, Hastings. I wouldn't be at all surprised.
Is this the Joseph Edge who's in the liquor distributing business?
Yeah, what can I do for you?
Nothing. I figured maybe there was something I could do for you. I'm in a phone booth at Mike's Tavern. That's where you were this morning at about 9:15, weren't you?
Mike's Tavern? Where's that?
That's where they shot Mike.
I'm afraid I don't get you.
I'll explain. I was the first customer at Mike's Tavern this morning. I went in a minute or two after the place was opened up. I went into the washroom. I was in there when you came in. You didn't think to look in there.
Well, tell that to the cops.
The only drawback is they don't pay.
Oh. A shake, is that it?
I've been saving this for a rainy day, and it's pouring cats and dogs right now.
Well, I hate to disappoint you, but it's real dry and sunny at this end.
You don't believe I was there, do you? I'll draw you a picture. There was another guy with you. You stood up against the bar on the right-hand side. He stood on the left. After the shooting, one glass was wiped clean and the other... Now, is it clouding up a little at your end?
Look, your proposition interests me. About how large... An umbrella would it take to keep you dry?
Oh, about a $500 one.
That's a pretty large umbrella.
This is a pretty heavy rainstorm.
All right. Look, there's no harm in getting together and talking this over. Meet me tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock in front of a barbershop called the Empire. You can't miss it. It's on Central Avenue. You got it?
Got it. Okay.
See you then. Goodbye.
Goodbye. 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Who are you kidding, brother? Phil, what time do you close up here?
Well, the boss usually kept it open until about 4, but I thought I'd close up in about 10 minutes. Want a nightcap before I cork up for the night?
Yeah, give me a short one.
Thanks. Hey.
Don't look at it. Just take it over to the register with you. Good night.
Good night. Well, I'll be doggone. He said keep the change, and it's nothing but a piece of paper all scribbled up with some writing on it. Keep the change.
Hey, could we trouble you for a light?
Oh, sure.
Say something, buddy.
Well, what do you want me to say?
Just that. That'll do very nicely, thanks. It's him, boys. I know him by his voice.
Here's your matches back, buddy.
That's not matches. That's a gun you've got there.
Right you are. It says get in and make yourself comfortable.
No, wait a minute.
Shut up. Get in here.
Okay, step on it.
Where are we?
In a warehouse where they store liquor. Ever been in a warehouse where they store liquor? It's very instructive.
You're frightened, my guy, boss.
No, this guy doesn't frighten so quick.
You don't have to be afraid, buddy. There's a nice umbrella in this for you. All we got to do first is find out if you're a phony or on the up.
I see. How are we going to do that?
Well, there's four of us here. You say you saw two guys come into Mike's tavern and shoot him yesterday. All right. Pick out the two you say you saw.
Give me a minute's time. I want to be sure of what I'm doing.
Yeah. You want to be plenty sure?
Well, there's you. Number one, granite face there. And number two, eyes a little shifty.
Come on, either you know or you don't.
I don't know. I want to figure out what it's best for me to say. Especially with that very efficient looking gun pointing at my stomach.
So you know who it was? I suppose you know why it was, too?
I do. It was a case of two birds with one stone or with one whiskey jigger. A guy had a long-standing grudge against Hastings and a hotter one against Mike Oliver for refusing to be hijacked by his liquor distributing ring. So he figured one murder should be enough to take care of both men. Right?
Go on, we're listening.
Oh, it's quite simple. Joe Edge had one of his men with grease on his hand put on a souse act and follow Hastings into a bar. He shook hands with him. And Hastings printed his own tips all over the glass he was using without even knowing it. Then the would-be souse swiped it and brought it to Edge. Edge took it to Mike's with him. Shot Mike. Switched glasses, left it behind there to frame Hastings. Shall I go on?
Sure, go on.
There's not much more except that the two guys I saw come into Mike's tavern and shoot Mike Oliver were you, Joe Edge, in front of me with a gun. You over there, the fourth guy with the shifty eyes.
That was the wrong answer.
You two were the ones that were there, so what's wrong about it?
Sure. We were there. That's why it's the wrong answer. If you'd picked the wrong two, you probably would have walked out of here alive. But you picked the right two. So you'll have to take your 500 in capsule form now.
Ooh. Boss, hey!
Holy mackerel, where'd that shot come from?
I'm right here.
What?
The rest of you keep him up. The place is covered. All right, Burgess?
Yeah, I guess I am, Inspector Lyons. Well, you sure got here just in time.
That looked pretty close. We tagged the car and followed it. You gambled heavily on that bartender, son.
I know. I was afraid to talk to him. For all I knew, someone of the gang was watching or listening. I scribbled a message for him to call you.
He did better than that. He saw you get in the car and phoned the license in. But look, how did you ever figure out that whiskey jigger was a plant?
Well, Edge got careless. He didn't think it mattered what he ordered at the bar from Mike. He was taking his glass out. No one would see it. So he ordered beer, and the character with him, acting on the suggestion, ordered beer, too. But Mike Oliver was a peculiar cuss. He insisted on being paid when the drinks were ordered, and he rang up the money before they shot him. When they found Mike's body, the cash register said 20 cents.
What does that prove?
Inspector, you can't break 20 cents down into a whiskey and a beer any day of the week. And there was a whiskey and a beer glass side by side on the bar.
Yes, but...
Well,
even if the beer glass was just a chaser for the whiskey. The price for the cheapest whiskey Mike carried was 25 cents. 20 cents will buy two beers. For the sake of simple arithmetic, the whiskey glass had to be planted.
Well, I'll be. Son, if you ever want a job on the police force,
No, thanks, sir. I'm plenty satisfied with the job I have now. Wait a minute.
What's wrong?
I just remembered. I haven't got a job. I was fired. Excuse me, I have to call my boss.
Hey, wait.
That was the story called Leg Man, written by William Irish, an old friend to you Mystery Playhouse fans. There's a moral to the story, too. The moral of the story is, don't ever pay for your drinks until after you've drunk them. Well, getting early again. It's almost not night anymore. This is T4Y closing the doors of the Mystery Playhouse and saying goodnight. Sleep tight. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
The Mole Mystery Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 19th of October, 1945, an NBC and Armed Forces Radio Service recording. And that does it for this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.